Welcome to Curses and Crossroads, a Monster of the Week actual play podcast. We are so excited to have you joining us on this wild adventure, and we ask that you are patient with us in these early episodes, as our audio was still a little bit rough. We ask also that you leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice, and to check us out on our social media. Our Twitter is CursesXRoads, and we hope to hear from you soon with your ideas and thoughts about the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us again, and welcome.
Hello everyone, my name is Garrett Heck. I am the Keeper, the Game Master of the Curses and Crossroads podcast. We got pretty far into our campaign before we decided to share it, so for the next few minutes I'm going to cover the basic plot points of our previous sessions in order to set up some narrative stuff and get all of you where we currently are. The adventure began as a one-shot, actually, a group of hunters that just left their old group, the Hunters Legion, because it had ties to the Cult of Dagon. So they were traveling as a unit when they read a coded article in a tabloid informing them that a string of mysterious disappearances hit the town of Foghorn, Oregon. The town, full of its own weirdness, would provide Flemeth minor fame as he reached the semifinals in an online game tournament held in Foghorn. Eden nearly lost control and attacked a girl, and Flemeth had to use his magic in public to save her. This adventure terminated under a lighthouse after unearthing ancient ties to the cult of an outsider. Its tentacled children had been reproducing with beachgoers, and both parent and child had returned through some deep call to have the child transform and join its family in the sea. A ritual, the name of a long-forgotten god, cured those that had yet to transform and warded the town from further invasion by outsiders. Sometime later, they investigated a small town in Colorado that had had full radio silence for nearly 2 weeks. When they reached the town of Gypsum, the streets were empty. There were, however, bodies in the homes, each impaled through the chest by a long prismatic crystal. When touched, the bodies disintegrated. And our heroes found that Gypsum used to be a mining town, and after a brief period of instability, seemed to have leveled out, cash-wise at least, after the mines dried up. The temple in the center of town was to a powerful crossroads demon named Aravolt, who had allowed the town, well, in exchange for every soul and every child's soul and so on for as long as the town stood. The town, which once worshipped the earth goddess Terra, destroyed her old temple and built Aravolt over their ruins. Terra took vengeance on the seventh generation of the townsfolk by sending forth an angel, the Spear of Retribution, Ozlarone, to claim their souls. This same angel had claimed the life of Rachel's friend Miles, and she had made it her personal quest to slay the creature. They spoke with Arvel, the crossroads demon, who treated them weirdly kindly, and offered his services should they require an item of specific quality. In the center of town, Rachel spoke to her friend's killer and forgave them, surrendering an ancient blade she had stolen from the Cult of Dagon. In exchange for the surrender of such a terrible weapon, the angel granted her a weapon of its own crystal and ascended into the sky. By this time, our heroes were contacted by the Bureau of Arcane Defense, an agency outside of the U.S. government dedicated to the secrecy of the weird. Its current director, Bob Queensland, had taken notice of the incident at Foghorn and offered to hire them as contractors. They accepted and headed to Seattle to respond to claims of a goblin sighting. They discovered a hidden fey neighborhood beneath the Fremont Troll statue and then an ancient dryad named Sprig. Flemeth saved his party from Sprig's overwhelming presence by volunteering his name. The party had rescued a goblin named Schroibel, the archivist in the Hollow Street Library, who described being attacked by men in Oasis Corps uniforms. Our heroes were then given a task: aid Hollow Street in a problem affecting the community from the inside, and Sprig wouldn't immediately evoke knowledge of Flynn's name. They explored the market, found a cafe, did bazaar shopping at a bazaar. The cafe, owned by the orcish family Ulashtar, headed currently by Trunchk Ulashtar, whom Rachel is now dating. After checking in with Troible, they discover the problem is with a dragon that lives within Mount St. Helen. The dragon typically feeds on the immense heat the mountain produces, but something is wrong. They are sent to a man called Hex. Hex was a geological surveyor in the Cascades until he fell into an antechamber filled with a viscous black-green sludge that smelled of rotting fish. When he came to, a massive red dragon was speaking to him telepathically. His body was now blackened bone, and nothing else. The dragon told him to take a single object from its hoard and how to enter Hollow Street, and to get there quickly. Hex guided them to a cave system within the mountain and led them to the dragon. The dragon, then now covered in thick black veins in a web-like pattern, could hardly speak, but guided them to intruders it could sense within its lair. These intruders were mining a thick black liquid from a pool in the tunnels. Eden, using her dark negotiator move, convinces the lead, some horrible living shade, that the material here has gone bad and to drill elsewhere. With a little help from Hex, who was a legitimate geological surveyor, the lead seemed to believe her, and they left. Having made friends, they went to the cafe to celebrate. The Trunchk-Rachel relationship was established, and they left. During this, during the whole Fairies in Seattle adventure, Jet left to check on an old friend, Diana. Diana was an old member of the Hunter's Legion. She contacted her. She needed help with something. Jet got to the site to find that she had brutally slaughtered every single person in a hidden temple of Dagon. Jet knew enough about terrible things to know that she could cover this up by framing it on another cult. So she got to work using magic to make the attack look inhuman, or at least more inhuman. Diana began asking a lot of questions about Flemeth, about her new group. Jet kind of dodged the questions as much as she could, and they parted ways. Jet spent the rest of that week following Diana, trying to stay far enough away from her, but she still doesn't know if Diana knew that she did that. The gang then went to Louisiana to help Eden's witch friend, Aurora. Aurora had lost contact with a few lesser elementals she uses for spells and decided to reach out to the hunters she knew. Aurora now lives with a mystical swordsman named Tien and a dwarf named Thargrind Ironheart. Our adventurers got to asking about the swamp, borrowed a boat, and discovered a giant alligator and an even larger alligator snapping turtle within the swamp. The latter seemed to be guarding a large building with an Oasis Corp logo. They decided to regroup, and with their invigorated numbers, decided to lay waste to the Oasis Corp base. They rushed in, Jet and Eden on infiltration to the base itself, Flemeth, Rachel, and Tien on the outside. Rachel and Eden entered the base through a lift and entered an infinite white space. In the distance, they saw a machine emptying barrels into a sieve that looked like a golden magnifying glass and filling new, smaller barrels with the sorted material. As they took in the bizarre nature of the scene, something approached them from behind. A man with a pale face and crimson robes asked what they were doing in his facility. Eden, again using Dark Negotiator, asked them to let her go. Giddy at finally having proper adventurers as adversaries, the creature let them leave, and as the fighting intensified outside, the adventurers all sped away to see the facility violently implode. Sometime during the investigation, Flemeth had a nightmare. He was standing on a clear ocean. The water was relatively still, and there was a perfect black sky. In the distance below him, he saw something. An infinite detail far too deep to see. A creature too long, its flesh ghastly white with long humanoid arms, starfish-like legs, and from the back of its long, nearly reptilian snout, lobes like wings stretched to cover its massive body. Its tail and claws tipped in glacial blue crystals, and all throughout its far too slender frame. Thousands of small, grotesque bumps. As he stared, it rose. Fast. Faster than something that size shouldn't have moved at all. Plymouth was paralyzed and powerless, and as he watched it rise, a thousand eyes along its body opened, and its cold, soft flesh struck his heel. And he woke up. Their current quest is to aid that primordial god who saved them in Foghorn, Primus. Primus's last priest, a woman named Lyra, has asked them to collect 3 missing pieces of Primus's last idol. They accepted. On their journey so far, they have battled Primus's forsaken son and unearthed a Mayan temple built in a long-forgotten colonization mission. They met a group of local hunters in the town of La Vibora, New Mexico, called El Fuerte, a group of generational luchadors who were trained in ancient combat and sworn to fight that which lurks in the dark. You're all caught up now. I'm sure there's some stuff my players would have liked me to add, but we'll cover it in-game or in a coming episode. Thank you so much for listening, and here are their character intros.
Hi, I'm Kelly Vera. I play Eden Hightower, and she is the monstress of this game.
So, I'm Eden Hightower. Yes, that is my God-given name, and no, my parents weren't smoking anything. Probably. I am physically 18, but technically 21. I'd love to tell you that my youthful appearance is due to a healthy diet and French moisturizers, but unfortunately, I am dead. Well, undead. I'm a vampire. I know, get out the laughter now. The tale of how I ended up on a janky tour bus with 3 other hunters, and all very odd, and is all very odd and long and complicated. But I'll give you the bullet points. Baby Eden was born on June 16th with her twin sister Rachel. It was raining, and Rachel was born 5 minutes earlier than I was, which somehow ingrained in her brain that she was the older sister. I am talking older sibling slash hero complex to the max. I was born to two very clandestine type hunters that believe children were meant to be warriors, soldiers. Was I exactly thrilled about this? I don't know. Would you be excited to practice chokeholds at 6 years old when everyone else was playing with Barbies and those cute little animal things with the big eyes? Well, I don't know you, so you might. I did not. There were things I witnessed, and some of them I still can't talk about today. I keep secrets from people I now call my best friends, and it's because my other best friend did something totally screwed up, and I happened to witness it. But let's not get into that. Rachel was always a better hunter. I think she stole all the hunter genes in the womb and left me with a smart mouth and lack of impulse control. We grew up, and we grew fierce, training for the day we'd be released into the field. Then Rachel got a boyfriend, and let me tell you, Miles was just as hero-y as she was. The two of them were constantly thriving off who was the better hunter, the smartest classmate, and the quickest to throw themselves into simulated mythical danger. They were a match made in heaven. You'd appreciate the facetiousness of that comment if you knew what happened. But I'm not going to tell you what happened, mostly because I don't care. And also, I really don't know what happened either. I was too busy being attacked in an alley by someone I thought I knew. Someone I thought I could trust. Now, I know what you're thinking. You dumbass, why were you strolling through an alley at night all alone? Well, plot twist. I wasn't alone, and I knew I wasn't safe. In fact, I had been expecting to be attacked. I just didn't know when he was going to do it. I had planned on getting him first, and that's why I took him down the alley, where it could be done clean and silently. Things didn't exactly go to plan. From there, I only had one thing on my mind. Well, make that 2 things. Blood and darkness. If I ever have a heavy metal band, that's so going to be the name. I ditched the lifestyle I had, not even bothering to say goodbyes, and became a different kind of hunter. One driven by opportunity. I ran all over the country to land in New Orleans, where I met a witch named Aurora, with a killer right hook and the ability to give me a daywalking ring. I no longer burned in sunlight, and I learned how to control the urge to feed. That was my safe haven for a while, but I started to feel like a bird in a cage. More appropriate would be a spider caught in its own web. I'm technically a spider. A black widow if we want to use labels. It's true. I'm a vamp spider. Okay, I'll stop that now. It was in Washington when things really changed. Naturally, I was hungry, because I'm always hungry. And so I was prowling around the woods, looking for some innocent creature to snack on. That's when I heard it. The wailing and screaming of something nearing death. I was so hungry I practically shifted on a dime, deranged by famine. But when I approached, all I could see was water swishing and ripping through the woods, and this beanpole of red hair writhing on the floor. Honestly, I had no idea what to do. He was in immense pain, and I nearly took advantage of that. Thankfully, I saw something familiar, recognized who it was, more importantly, whose son it was. Still, he was screaming so loud it was giving me a headache. So I did what any rational spider person would do in this situation. I slapped him across the face. His expression was priceless, and when he looked at my hand, I realized I hadn't changed back. I began to laugh, because honestly, what a picture this moment must have been. I don't know why he was laughing, probably because I looked ridiculous, but a click happened, and Flemeth became my best friend. Which, after some irrelevant time jumping, catches us up to now. Reunited with my estranged sister, who thought I was dead, sitting on a bus with a government spy who was previously a hunter that worked with my family, and her magical son, Flemeth. While we trail the country looking for creatures getting out of line. Did I miss anything? Oh well, you guys get the picture. And if you don't, no worries. You'll figure it out soon enough.
Hi everyone, my name is Jacqueline Barra and I am playing Rachel Hightower. She is from the Wronged playbook and here is her story. I remember since the time I was a little kid, my parents would tell us these incredible stories, heroes and monsters. My whole life I'd always known. Hunting was in our blood. It was who we were, who we are. When you're 18, you're told your life will change. You go to college and everything's different. But I wasn't ready for it to change in that way. It was October. Not too long after midterms, and I remember I was looking for Miles, my boyfriend, at the time, and I went to the meeting house. We'd been training since the middle of the summer. If he was anywhere, he was going to be there, but it was dark, and it was empty. And the smell, I can still remember the smell, because it smelled like blood. I remember calling out to him. I remember calling out to anybody, but there was no one there. There were supposed to be so many people there. I remember turning the corner into the common room, and it was chaos. Shards of purple and black stone scattered the ground, and there in the center of the room was Miles. I remember being overwhelmed. I remember I didn't know what to do. All I could do was stare at him, and then in the corner of my eye I saw something move, and I couldn't reach for the gun that I always carried, and I remember him whispering my name and his hand reaching out for me. "Where's Eden, Miles? Where's Eden?" I begged. My sister. My best friend. All he could do was reach up and touch the side of my face. His fingers were already growing cold, and he smiled at me. And then he was gone. I didn't have anywhere else to go. If Eden was gone and Miles was gone, I was alone. I was so alone. And that's when I met Flemeth. I was hurt and I was angry. I didn't understand. All I knew was that after hours and hours of researching into angels and magic and all the things that I had ignored for so long, I knew I was looking for something beyond this earth. And then one night, way out in the woods in rural Utah, I did something so bad. A group of college kids were trying to bring something evil into the world, and I snapped. I should have just stopped them, I should have taught them, but I snapped. I killed them all. All five of them. And then, there in that clearing with the fire burning, came Plymouth. This bright red shock of hair and even brighter blue eyes, and he didn't judge me. He talked me down, and for somebody who seemed so young at the time, he was so wise and told me things would be all right. And they would be. Things would be all right.
Hi, I'm Jovan Morrison. I'm playing the role of Flemeth Jett, and I'm the spellslinger of the group.
Mic check, 1-2. Mic check, 1-2. I had a friend once. She was part of the theater tech department at school. And apparently when you check the mics to see if they're working, you're not supposed to tap on them or blow on them. So I was always really confused why everyone does it in the movies, right? And she would get so pissed, and she could rant for hours about the actor kids and how stupid they were. Yeah, so Ma is making me make this so I can document our adventures and feelings and everything. So, yeah. I don't know what to say. It's like, you know when you're about to order a coffee and you practice what you're gonna say in your head, like large salted caramel frappuccino, large salted caramel frappuccino, large salted caramel frappuccino, and then suddenly it's your turn in line. And then the cute barista looks at you, and his hair looks so, so soft, and his eyes are the prettiest brown, and then suddenly your brain goes blank, and you just, Larted Malcino. And then you sit there, and he sits there, and you stare at each other. And then, you know, you run away, pissed because A, you messed up your order, so B, you won't get any sugar and caffeine, and C, another cute guy is aware of your existence in, like, the worst possible way. I guess not the worst. Okay. I guess I should start at the beginning. My name is Flemeth Pika Jett. I am 20 years old, a Pisces. My interests involve playing video games, singing, listening to music, starting fires, putting said fires out, and studying my magic. I am also a wizard, or mage, or Wiccan, or warlock, or whatever. I don't really know where I got my magic. Oh my god, though, the first time I used it was hilarious. I was out swimming in the river with Ma, right? And a fish must have brushed up against her, and she flipped out, started shouting and smacking at the water, trying to walk out of the river and falling, and it was just hilarious. And so I just kind of reached out, right? And then the fish floated up in this little water ball, and it was spinning and swimming around in it, and I just kept giggling, and I've never seen Ma look so shocked. Well, except that one time. No, we don't need to get into that. So, I guess I didn't really have a normal childhood. Obviously, I'm magic, but like, who else can say they have a Ma that tells them bedtime stories of her time in the war? Yeah, no, I still don't know what war she's talking about. And Every time I ask, she just laughs and walks away, or one time threw a cookie at me. So, like, normal for me was Ma training me how to blend in with people and make them do what I want and hide my magic and, you know, not talk to strangers because I could get kidnapped. Which is ironic, right? Considering what happened to her. So yeah, 7th or 8th birthday? I can't really remember which one. But yeah, I get off the bus from school and I walk home and then the door is just off the hinges. And I walk inside and the house is destroyed. Furniture everywhere. The cookie jar was shattered. The fridge was on the floor with food spilling out. I didn't know what was happening. I just walked into the front room and sat down. I must have been waiting there for hours. And I don't know why. I thought suddenly Ma would come back, you know? I didn't know why she was gone, but I knew she wasn't there, and I sat there waiting, and she just never showed up. Well, I guess eventually the neighbors noticed something was up, and maybe they heard me crying, or who knows. Look, cut me some slack with my memory. I was just a little brat, and I didn't know what was happening, why my home was destroyed, or where my Ma was. And, well, you know, then basic sob story foster kid bull. I grew up shitty houses with shittier people. And eventually I ran away and I met up with a gang of other kids who didn't need parents to tell them what to do and didn't need society to help them out. We did bad stuff, but it felt like I had a real family again. So I didn't really care if we vandalized things or stole things, sprayed graffiti on places, or if we hurt people. Anyway, all that time just really blurs together. I do remember leaving, though. I remember the boss just kept getting angrier and angrier, and people who didn't need to get hurt, he suddenly wanted us to hurt real bad, and I argued with him, and I decided to just leave. I don't know. I wandered for a while and got lost, because somehow I ended up in Utah. And I was on this college campus, right? Super fun people there. Not everyone. Some of them were huge dicks. But I managed to convince most of them that I was a student there, even though I was like 5 years younger than them. And this one group seemed really fun. They just kind of had that feel about them that reminded me of my gang before the bad times. And they invited me to a party in the woods, and I don't know why, my brain didn't scream flashing warning signs. They were trying to summon something, though. I don't know much about summoning magic, but what I could taste from it, it was something old and mean and just gross. And before I could really stand up and stop them, this giant black-haired Valkyrie just charges them, starts tearing them apart, and part of me feels like I should stop her. They're just college kids, right? And the other part was still wondering why they would invite a kid my age to a forest with them when they were trying to summon something. Anyway, they were all gone. And then this Valkyrie looks over and her eyes just looked so tired. The kind of tired that you shouldn't be unless you're a million years old. And I just told her that everything was going to be okay. And I kept saying that until she sat down and calmed down. And we talked. Her name is Rachel. I can't really remember where I was. It was somewhere on the west coast with a big forest near the ocean. Probably Washington. I feel like Washington. But something about the place just made my magic itch. But no, itch isn't a strong enough word. It felt like I was burning up on the inside. Everything just felt so intense. Every noise was a rhapsody. Every breeze against my skin was razors. Every smell in the air was just overwhelming to the point I thought I couldn't feel anything else. And then suddenly the breeze would change, and while my skin was being torn open, I could smell a million other things. And then I tripped on a root, and it just was too much. Falling against the ground felt like I leapt from a building. I was screaming and crying and punching at the ground. I was in pain, and I wanted everything else to be too, and my magic was lashing out, just drawing gallons and gallons of water out of the trees and the ground and the moss on the rocks, and it was swirling around, tearing into everything and destroying all this old life around me. And God, it felt good. It felt like scratching a mosquito bite, and it was nice, but it wasn't enough, and I just needed to do more. And then I got slapped by a spider. Not a spider, but a vampire who looks like a spider. Look, even now I still don't understand all her weirdness, but it was my soon-to-be best friend Eden. She had these thick plates of armor covering her in this weird face helmet thing, and she slapped me, and it felt like being hit in the head with a pillow full of cinder blocks. I still remember her leaning over me, asking if I was okay. And I was like, no, crazy lady, I think you just broke my jaw. And then she just kind of looked down at her armor-covered hand like she had never seen it before and started giggling. And for some reason, that made me start giggling too. And we must have looked like a couple of crazy people, because here we are in this torn up section of the forest, just giggling on the ground. And I honestly never felt more at home with another person in my life before. I remember running from someone. I had gotten in over my head during a hunt, I think. My memories are garbage, but we were in the city, and my magic just would not respond. It felt like calling out in an empty room and only hearing echoes. But even then, they were echoes of echoes. It was so faint, and there was just nothing. I was terrified. I was running down these dark alleyways, trying to lose the people chasing me, and I wanted to laugh in that manic, I'm going to die in the city alone because something's wrong. It already shot at me a couple times, and I remembered my left leg just burning, but feeling so cold. And then I stumbled into a dead end. And that's when I really started laughing. A dead end. I died like I lived, with puns. I turned around, and there they were. There were only three of them, and it felt like 300. I decided, even if they killed me, I was gonna take down at least one of them. The one in the middle. She looked, I don't know, more evil, I guess, in my eyes. I still knew I was gonna die. Of course, I wasn't gonna make it easy regardless. I remember getting ready to say dramatic last words as I charged them with my little knife. And then suddenly my hero dropped down from the sky. Or the roof above us, but you know, blood loss makes things more dramatic. This tiny 5-foot-tall Russian woman with red hair just screaming as she appeared on the left one's shoulders, and she twisted her thighs, and then snap, he was down. And she cartwheeled off of him onto the one on the right, doing some acrobatic handstand shit, and she wrapped around him, and then another snap, and he was gone too. The last one was spooked now, and she was getting ready to run. And before she could, I jumped on her, and I remember stabbing her over and over again, just plunging my knife into her. And she screamed at first, and then I remembered she wasn't anymore, and I was covered in her blood, and I just kept stabbing. Why was I angry? I wiped some blood off my lips and looked up to thank my savior. And there she was, Ma, just standing there with a shocked expression. And I started to cry, tears carving rivers through my blood-stained skin, and she was crying too, and then we were both crying on the ground, holding each other as I was covered in some lady's blood, and I remember apologizing for staining her shirt. And suddenly I was all right again. Even though I was still bleeding and I was bruised and I didn't understand why, I knew I'd be all right.
Hi, I'm Jaylee, and I play Caroline Jett, aka Jett. My character is from the Expert Playbook, and just a little bit of backstory about my character. It started as a joke in high school, so please excuse my horrible Russian accent. I do not know this person named Caroline Jett, but if I did, I would say she's probably a Russian spy. And I would say she probably only drinks coffee and only eats Oreos. She really, really likes Oreos, like way too much. She loves her son Flemeth. He is the light of her life, and no matter how much she says it, she would never abandon him. She was may or may not been kidnapped. Also, she likes Bob. Bob is a pretty okay person to her, and her best compliment she could ever give you, she likes you, is that you would survive a Russian winter. She doesn't like you, she tells you you'll die.